Hello everyone, welcome to Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, the podcast where I speak to people much more interesting than myself. Please enjoy. Hello everyone and welcome back to this episode of Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends, the podcast where I speak to people much more interesting than myself, as the tagline goes. I'm joined today by an old friend, another artiste, and much like many of the people that work in the arts, we met working in hospitality. So I'm joined today by a fantastic actor, director, writer. There's not much this man can't do. Please welcome to the podcast, Mr. Colm G. Doran. Oh, Colm.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having me, Darren. This is fantastic.
Yes.
It's nice to be here, even at 10 to 10 in the morning.
Hey. I know you're nocturnal.
This early that it wasn't a dentist appointment.
Yeah, there's no noon kickoffs in the theatre. I get that. Okay. Yeah, I suppose I should always start my podcast these days as I always do, which is I keep insane. How are you fighting it?
God, yeah. Well, I mean, on top of it, today's the first day of Lent, so if you wanted to be even more depressed, you know, take chocolate out of your diet for 6 weeks, and then you're pretty damn low. But yeah, no, I think I'm all right. I think we're all getting a bit tired. Obviously, we're all getting a bit fatigued with the situation. But yeah, I think overall, I'm all right. I'm getting used to being a hermit. It's actually worrying me that I'm getting a bit too used to being a hermit. I think when people start to say, yeah, we're going to meet up outside wherever tomorrow at 4, I'll go, oh, I have to get in the car. Oh, shit, I've got to wear clothes. Oh, no. But yeah, no, I think I'm all right. What about you?
You'll be showering and shaving on a daily basis next. It'll be madness altogether.
Madness. Can you imagine?
I'm all right. Probably like yourself, I'm missing the old live performance. I've been chatting to a couple of comedians about that. It's obviously we're a very attention-seeking bunch. So yeah, probably dangerous to have a bunch of comedians locked away and not able to vocalize. But I mean, you're theater-based, so obviously that's another means of performance that's fully not happening at the minute.
Yeah, and that was really horrendous, because I think when this all first hit, I had just finished working on a show in the Mac that we had brought back, and I was in rehearsals for a brand new show that was going up in the Mac and going on tour the following way. I think it was in the middle of March it was starting down south, because we finished up our last day of rehearsal, and that was the day the south locked down. And that lockdown was like something out of a film then, not reality, you know, because when it was on the news, the South has locked down. We were like, whoa, this isn't Twitter. This is an IMDb page. You know, what's happening? So that stopped. And then there was a show already that I'd already directed that was out on tour, and it still had a dozen dates still to go, stretching out probably into the summer. And it was just awful to get the phone calls every day for the next week, 2 weeks to go, yeah, that's not happening. That's not happening. March is out, April's out, May's out. And you're kind of going, well, maybe the summer's okay. Maybe the summer will be all right. No, September's out as well. Right, grand. It was horrendous. It was horrendous. But I mean, everybody was in the same boat, and some people had it far worse. For sure than what I did, and at least I had a bit of security and was living at home, so I was sort of all right. I wasn't panicking, but it was just creatively, artistically, you know, mentally, your well-being, I think everybody went into a hole for a while. I'm sure you did too.
Oh, absolutely. I had to kind of go back to playing team sports to be as an excuse to get exercising again, and just sort of get my head right, get out of the house, the whole deal. So yeah, I completely understand that. I do sort of, I also think as well of the kind of artsy people, which is your natural performers, where it's just like, right, you go sit in the corner and don't do anything for a while. You're like, oh, I'm not used to this, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think the fear, and with anything, I think when you don't do it for a while, I've noticed when you suddenly don't have to do it for a while, you know, you think it's great, it's a nice break or whatever, and then suddenly you start thinking about doing it again, and the fear that you normally have around whatever it is you do, whether it's performing or it's directing, it's writing, whatever it is, the fear is somehow quadrupled when you start to do it again, because you start going, no, I can't do this, It's gone. If I ever could do it, I can't do it anymore. It's gone. It's dead. It's never coming back.
I've done a couple of like garden gigs where we were able to put on shows in another comedian's garden, basically. I did about 2 Zoom gigs. It honest to God feels like I'm restarting, because it's kind of your chops, you know. You can't take 10 years off being an actor and, you know, come back and be fully into it. So it's the same with comedy. You have to kind of keep the wheels greased. You have to keep doing it. I actually had to go and, before I had a show, I had to go and listen to a recording, because I was like, is that my joke? You know what I mean? I'm sure it's kind of like, it must be like being on stage and you're like, line, you know, that kind of thing. You're like, fuck, what am I saying here? So it was pretty terrible. But the mad thing is as well, I always want to do these podcasts and talk about kind of something else. But obviously the first thing you always have to check in with somebody is like, how are you getting on? Is this fucking weird? How are you coping? But I mean, get away from that. We can swing back around to that. But going way, way back from whenever I knew you, when you were a student and studying, how did you get started? What makes you decide on the drama life?
Oh God, for me, it was kind of like, I tried to do everything but it for a while, because you leave university, and I had done a drama degree and sort of imagined that the minute I graduated, the doors would open everywhere magically, and I would just begin, and that would be my life. And then that didn't happen. And still shocked it didn't. Wow. But and then you just sort of go, well, okay, well, what else will I do? I have to make money. So you do all the other things. And I was still working in hospitality, as you know, for a while, and then moved over to working in Queens in admin, because I hadn't stayed there long enough to do a degree and a master's. I just thought, well, I could get a job here. I could do this. Typing and phones, yeah, I could do that. So did that for a while. And then, thank God, slowly but surely, I started to get tiny, tiny little opportunities, all, you know, totally free, and just delighted to be in the room with people making things and creating things. And luckily, within a short amount of time, I got a bursary for theatre directing in James Ellis's name, a huge, huge actor from here. He was in Zed Cars, he was in so many things, huge legacy. And I was lucky to get it paid for about 3 months' work. And then I had been able to line up a couple of assistant directing gigs as well with big theatre companies and things like that allowed me the security to go, right, I can see about 6 months where I could be potentially hypothetically working. There we go. That's enough to go, I'm going to take a break from admin and from 9 to 5 and all that. So I took a career break January 2018, I think. And overnight, like, you have to decide that obviously a couple of months in advance, and that was all grand. I had decided in September, told my boss and all that, and had signed the paperwork and all that stuff. I was leaving in January, and then like something like January the 2nd, I lost 3 months of that 6 months' work.
Yeah,
just disappeared, and that's what happens. It can happen, and then you can get 6 more months overnight. But that happened, and I nearly shat myself and thought, what am I doing? What's going to happen? And luckily, touch wood and fingers crossed, I've very rarely been out of work since it. You know, I've maybe had a month here and there that I think everybody gets, where you go, is that it? I finished a project, I have nothing immediate. Is that it? Will I ever work again? And then something comes up, and thank God, hopefully it continues. Obviously, that's pre-COVID bullshit, because now nothing comes up anymore. But that was really it. And starting just very, very small scale stuff. I hadn't written anything at that point, really. And that was me starting to develop myself as a writer. And it was a lot of work, just helping out on productions as much as I could, and meeting as many people as I could, and trying to get myself out there, because I had come away from it for quite a while. So I think nobody really thought that I was doing this, and they'd be right, I wasn't. So it took a while to just sort of get back into it, but it's brilliant. I would never change it, and I can't see myself doing anything else. And I think if this kind of time that we're living in doesn't put you off whatever it is that you love to do, then I don't think you can be put off, because you know there's nothing like being told your industry is dead to try and dissuade you. But no, there's nothing else that I want to do. But yeah, that was kind of it. That was how I sort of slid into it.
Yeah, I know that, you know, it's really messed up as well, in to where somebody's like, look, I know we've had, you know, live performance in theater since the days of ancient Greece, but that's over now. And you're like, whoa, what? Like, that's like 3,000 years. What are you talking about? We're not just stopping. We're not just going to go, right, I guess that was a thing. You know, that's...
Yeah, but, absolutely. It's mental. It's mental. Because I still remember people saying, do you remember, I it was my A-levels, I think, was when bird flu was potentially going to be a thing. Yeah. And like every morning, I remember getting up to go into school, and your man Bill Turnbull on breakfast TV going, "Yes, and bird flu, and it's coming, and you know, we'll get the bunker built now because it'll save you time later." And it didn't happen. So I think, you know, even in January, February, I was going, "Yeah, but not here. It'll happen somewhere else, but it'll not come here. And if it does, we'll all have a bit of a sneeze over the weekend, and that's it. We'll be grand. And now here we are. Flip me."
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And as someone who's had COVID, I wish it was a wee fucking sneeze over the weekend. So yeah.
Right, enough.
Wash your hands, you dirty bastards.
But that must be, I mean, for you to work, you know, working in hospitality and all that, and being around the public at a time like this, that's scary. Like I feel yes, okay, it's shit that I can't really do that much in terms of trying to put work out, but at least I can feel safe. I don't go outside the door. How does that feel?
Yeah, customer facing's not fun. I mean, obviously, with no gigs, I mean, I was never a full-time comedian. I was always probably just my kind of work ethic and my sort of upbringing is like always have something to cover you. You know what I mean? It would be great to be at a level where I'm just like, right, let's just take the plunge. But no, I was too busy traveling and having fun, so I was like, no, I never really developed to that. So you have to work. Look, it's a sad way of the system of how it works, but there you go. I have to have a job, and yeah, being customer facing, it's dead on. You know what, most people are sound, but you just need one person to ruin your fucking day. As you know, you and I have worked many shifts together and had great laughs, and then there's one bitch at table four wrecks everybody's night.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Next thing you know, we're in the pub drinking the sixth pint, being like, oh, I'm back in opening tomorrow. Anyway. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
I feel bad for younger people in hospitality now, because obviously the pub's not open if you've had a shit shift.
That's right. Yeah. You can't even go and unwind. But I mean, yeah. Imagine, can you do other, can you like lock in a bit then? Does it all go underground a bit more? It's all very speakeasy, like, you know, just lock the doors, turn the lights off, and we'll all have a drink together.
I'm sure that's happening somewhere. There's definitely definitely down around home, because they're just such a lawless bunch of bastards anyway. There's definitely there's clearly a Shebeen open somewhere, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And but, nothing to do with COVID, this should be, but it just has more trade now than it ever had before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's sexier now, because you're not supposed to.
Absolutely.
Would you give that advice? I mean, to people coming out of their drama degrees, so obviously, you know, like yourself, I mean, did you always have an interest in drama? Did you do the school plays and the amateur productions, or were you just like, I'm going to give this drama degree a crack?
Yeah, I mean, surprisingly enough, yes, I sort of came out of the womb twirling a cane a bit. It that was kind of from a very young age. I wanted to do something in the arts for sure. I didn't know what it was, and it was acting for a long time. It was just, you know, I just loved the fact that I remember coming home from nursery school and I'd learned all the words of the song that the teacher had strummed on the guitar. And I stood up and performed it in front of my parents, and my mum put me in the car, drove me out to about six of her relatives and pushed me into their house and went, do your song the way you did it. And then so, you know, and that was it. And then the minute that people look at you and give you praise, and that's all you had to do, that's all, you know, you just had to do that. Then I was like, yeah, no, there could be something in this. So I did the speech and drama thing for years with an ancient woman. It was wonderful, but it just looked like she would fall apart at any moment, but she was great. And yeah, did all the faces and did all that for years, and then didn't really know anything about how did you ever do this long term. I just thought it was just something fun to do. And then when I got to A level and I got about picking universities and stuff, I sort of thought, well, maybe I could maybe try this at university and see what happens. I hadn't even done it at A level. Our school didn't offer it. At A level, it was, you know, and even I can remember sort of careers wise, when you were like, yeah, I'm going to do a drama degree. And then they were like, yes, but you'll need your English. You'll need your English. And I was going, oh, okay. And then so the careers advisor saw that I was doing French for A level. And she was like, so you'll do your French with your drama then? You know, you need something, you know, if you're going to teach, you're going to need something. And I was going, but I don't want to teach. And that was like, I might as well have said, I want to rip my own ears off. You know, and it, she, you know, just the look on the face of going, you don't want, you're going to do drama and you don't want to teach. So yeah. And then you go, then just went to uni, and the Queen's course is very much back then it was a sort of half and half between practical and theory and the history and all of that sort of stuff. Which was good. It was great. It was a nice blend. I liked it, and I made sure to go for a lot of the practical stuff, and did a load of stuff with the Players Society in and around it to try and get more experience, and even stage management and loads of other areas that I didn't know I wanted to learn anything about. But suddenly I was doing all I could do just to see, where do I fit? What, you know, I love performing and I did do a lot of performing, but I realized during that time that actually I really love the directing and writing side of things. I really love the creating side on that side, because there are so many incredible performers. I let them do their thing. I want to be on this side of it. I think that was really it for me. But yeah, it was always there. What about you? Were you standing up at 6 years old making funny jokes to your parents?
Nobody, like most comedians, it came later in life. I didn't start doing stand-up till I was 25. But when I was younger, I would have done the feshes, and my mum was one of the founders of the Bessbrook Amateur Dramatic Society. So I did two plays with them. We did a couple of festivals as well. So I had been on stage as well. It was kind of like, there's four boys in my house and I'm the worst at the sports. So we're like, let's find Darren as we thing. So it was that kind of way as well. But I mean, you're the same as me. You're from a very small place. So when you announced that you were, you know, I'm going to be in the theater, people are like, what?
Yes. Well, I just think, you know, that nobody really talks about it that much. And I mean, I don't know anybody from around here that does it. If you know, like, I've one friend that's training to be a director and lives just sort of outside Kilkeel, and I'm going, wow, there's another one in the area. It's great. But no, I think for years it was sort of said in hushed tones. If any of my family asked how I was doing, you know, aunts and uncles and stuff, you know, I was calling, getting on, it was like, oh, yeah, he's still at that. But no, but he's still with Queens. He's just on a career break. He's still with Queens, so he can go back.
Yeah,
and it was like, you know, trying to reassure them, but now it's they're starting to be a wee bit more confident in me, thank God. I think once you're on the, if you're on any sort of broadcast, if you're on a radio or a TV program, anything like that, promoting something, they kind of sit up a bit and go, on the TV, right? So that you must really be doing something then.
Yeah, I think it's a visibility for the layman. It's you know, you're like, well, actually, I do this full time, and we're, you know, I'm involved in 100 performances this year, and people are just like, but I didn't see you.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't mean I'm not doing my job. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So. Yeah. And the one that everybody gets asked is, oh, right, and are you involved in Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Game of Thrones, awful big. And that's all we got. Everybody got that for years and years and years and years.
Yeah.
And even me that doesn't really act anymore got that for years and years and years. And you're going, and thank God it stopped, because I hate being asked about it.
I'm just imagining that one. Well, son, you've the long hair, would you not just grow a beard?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're like, the demographic of partner I attract likes the smooth face, I love you.
I've done a focus group. I don't test well with a beard, so I'm not going to go that way.
Oh, my God. Yeah, if you can't tell from listening to us, it's quite evident that Colm is, of course, a culture like myself. So
I'll deny it. I'll deny it to the
end.
Oh,
brilliant. What a great, I love that as well, that this is your chosen, your chosen career, because that's like the old joke of, you know, if you live in the small village and go, what about your man? He's just always, he's into the theatre, if you know what I mean.
Yes, I'm every inch the stereotype.
And you're like writer, director, performer, yeah. Whenever you went and actually did the drama degree, I think obviously, as you said, the initial shock that you graduate and you don't win a Tony Award 6 months later, how would you kind of frame that when you're talking to people? Because obviously you were like, Jesus, once I was doing that, I decided I tried writing, I'd love to direct, even being a stage manager. It's probably stuff you never thought of. You only imagined that the curtain opens and you're there.
Exactly.
But the production that happens around that is incredible. And I only know that from doing like amateur productions, and we did Grease in school, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, if you ever want to see a hilarious production of Grease, watch it put on by a bunch of teenagers in a Catholic school, and the edits in the script are hilarious. So where did you go to school? What was your school that you didn't get to do drama in?
St. Louis Grammar School in Kilkeel.
Yeah, there was no drama when I was doing A-levels, but there is now, you know what I mean? So
there could be now. It could be theatre studies or something like that available now, which I'll always be bitter about. practically, I was a one-man campaign to get it brought in, and I probably would have been the only one studying it, like, but I was like, I'll do it, I don't care. But yeah, I remember graduating, and one of the lecturers said on our graduation, was obviously congratulating everybody, and she hugged me and said, you're an entrepreneur now. You have to be. You have to go and make your work, because it's not going to come to you. And I sort of again was like, of course it will. Don't be so ridiculous, you know. But in the arts, and I'm sure comedy has a similar thing, it's that awful thing of being able to see other people do it and see other people become successful, and yet you have no idea how they did it or how you might do the same thing, because everybody's path is so different, and it's all down to good luck and who was there that day, and it was all by chance anyway, and it could all have gone a totally different way. So I don't think there's anything that definite. I just think ultimately, if it's something that you want to do and you're passionate about it, don't give as long as I did. Don't walk away for about 3 or 4 years completely and then try and get back into it. But also by doing that, I think, as I said earlier on, it made me realize that I couldn't be without it, you know, because I tried to be without it for so long and I was miserable. The only thing that really got me through that time was the fact that I was living with a bunch of legends that I had gone to uni with that had all, like me, refused to grow up for a couple of years afterwards, and we just had the best crack. So I didn't care so much that I wasn't doing what I absolutely loved to do. But the minute that sort of stopped and people started to move on and time started to change, I started to immediately go, why am I not doing what I want to do? And in fairness to my dad, normally parents are going, when are you going to settle, when are you going to get a proper job? My dad was ringing me in Maggie Mays and going, great that you've done another shift, and that's great that there's money coming in. What about theatre? That's what you love to do. Why are you not doing it? And like weekly would go, so what are you doing theatre wise? I was going, Dad, shut up. It'll happen. It'll happen when it happens. But, he was hugely supportive, and I definitely wouldn't have even thought about taking the plunge and trying to do it as a proper career if he hadn't supported me completely and gone.
Can I say it as well? This is the least Irish dad thing I've ever heard, where your dad's like, do what you love. My dad
incredible.
Was like, do you know how to weld yet? I'm like, no. What are you
I know, it's bad. I think it's because he's had 100 careers. He was a fisherman. He worked in the tax office. He was a ski instructor in Switzerland for a while. Like, the man has done every job out there going. So I think he's kind of going, yeah, if that's what you love and you're good at it, fucking do it. Why would you not? Like, don't waste your time not doing it. So I mean, he's probably deeply very fearful of my future, but he hides it very well. So
yeah, because your dad's, that's real pioneering shit, because your dad's kind of the age of my parents, where you leave school, you get a job and stay there until you die. That's like
that's it. Exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he opened it. He ran his own business. Like, he is still running his own business, but he's an upholsterer, and he became an upholsterer by reading a book. Like, there was no like course involved or anything like that. I needed on paper, and I needed notarized by four people for me to feel like I'm worthy of that skill. But he read a book on upholstery that was probably written in the 50s, and just went, yeah, I'm going to open a business and buy a premises and do it. And he's been doing it for 40 odd years. So unbelievable. So
about him, at least he's backing you. I think that's bound to make life a lot easier. Like, how many of your friends were their families? You know, I think in the arts, you have this real thing where there's kind of weird of the different stereotypes of people you'll meet in theater and comedy and acting and all that sort of stuff. Sometimes you'll have the thing where it's like two well-to-do parents, and the kids like, well, sure, I can live off mommy and daddy and make a disgrace out of this kind of thing. Or yeah. Then you've got people who are just like, I just really love doing this and I want to give it a crack, and hell or high water, you have to give it a go. So it's an interesting mix of people that you meet out there.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it's always interesting to look at how people's parents view what they're doing, because it's so different. And I've met people who are, you know, never out of work, incredibly talented, they're in TV shows, all sorts, and you begin to talk about their parents and they go, yeah, I mean, they're happy for me, like, but you know, we wouldn't waste a lot of time talking about it. And then you're going, what? Like, I can't. I'm incredibly lucky, and I know that. But it just makes such a huge difference. You know, it absolutely does, because I think this industry, and you know this as well, is so uncertain. Without COVID, it's so uncertain. On a typical year, I could tell you what I'm doing in October, in January, but I can't tell you what February looks like. Yeah. So you know, that's just the way it falls. So you need a support system of some description around you to say it's going to be grand and you're going to be fine, and that last thing you did was great, even if it wasn't, and you know, you're going to get more work as a result, and it's going to happen. Because you need to have your nerve in all of this, because it is so uncertain. You know, you've just got to hope and try and steel yourself that, you know, it will keep coming, the work will keep coming, you know you're not going to be on the street, you're going to be fine.
Is theater the kind of idea where it's, are you only as good as your last job, or is there more to be said for consistency, like if you're continually working and developing? Because obviously I'm sure the first thing you wrote, you would look back at it now and you'd tear it to bits versus...
Oh, I'm sorry. Whatever I wrote yesterday, I would rip it up and tear it to bits. I don't know. I think with making art and making your work, it's a process. And I think everybody has to learn their skill and learn their craft and get better. I wouldn't say it's all on your last show. I think to you it feels like it is, but I think it's, you just want to get better. There's always a distance between where you want your work to be and where it is, and you know, the difference in between is the frustration, but it's also the drive to keep you going to try and get better. But no, I think, and it's incredible, even during all of this, the work that has been able to be produced by certain theatre companies that are going online and doing Zoom shows and creating incredible pieces of work that have adapted fully to what we're living through. The theatre company I'm most associated with, Threes Theatre Company, we do a lot of immersive stuff, and it's all very much to do with taking the audience on a physical journey around a building and or a location of some sort, and the scenes and pieces of drama and theatre happen around you and you don't know where they're coming next, and it's all about the audience's experience. So our stuff doesn't lend itself to online, annoyingly enough, but and when there's so many people doing it so well, you also, you know, you don't want to take anything away from them, and you know, because then you're doing a shit version of it essentially. So we have had to take a bit of a back step, but we do have work. We had work luckily that is audio, that, you know, is an audio tour, and about homelessness that we wrote 2 years ago. I wrote 2 years ago, me and one other writer, Gina Donnelly, wrote, looking at my version of my side of it looks at street homelessness, and her side of it looks at hidden homelessness, and domestic violence, things like that. So that can absolutely happen in COVID safe times. But yeah, so there's a wealth of work going on even in these awful times, and that's incredible to see, you know. And people are really, you know, stepping up and having to diversify what they're doing. So, yeah. But it's incredible. But what has come out of it?
Well, I mean, I think with obviously you can't traditionally just go to a theatre and watch a play. So, but creativity doesn't stop. So the artists will find a new way to present. That's obviously what you guys are doing. We're like, well, how can we do this? How can I write an entire show that adheres to a government safety guideline? And that's a skill to be all like, there's the piece. And then somebody gives you a set of rules, which is really weird, and an art form, which is totally expressive and free. And then they go, no, here's restrictions. And you're like, oh, cool. How would I present a play in North Korea? Here we go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, because it's not hard enough. It's not hard enough to try and do it with very little funding and all the usual struggles that you have to build work. But also now people can't come near one another or be in the same room. Great.
Yeah. One of the things, there's a guy who drops into the cafe sometimes, and he's an actor. One of those ones where, you know, like, I don't know the guy's name, but we chat all the time whenever he's in. And I said to him, I was like, how are you able to work, or what are you doing? And he was like, oh, we're doing a lot of, there's a lot of like script reads on Zoom and stuff. And I was thinking, now I do a podcast, not this one. I do another podcast called The Injury Time, which is like a sports podcast. And we were doing...
Why didn't you have me on that podcast, Darren?
What's your favorite sport? Exactly.
Is figure skating a sport?
Hey, it's in the Olympics. It's good enough for me. They, what was it? They had it that we tried to do with guests. So we were recording together, and then we weren't able to. So we were recording like this, which was okay because there's only two of us. Anytime we put a guest on, there's a third person. So there's a delay on the chat. And see, trying to be funny when comic timing isn't in the same room, fucking nightmare. So I can only imagine actors trying to present a scene, and there's a pause after every line, and you're like, this is the least natural thing I've ever heard. You know, like, you know, when you're writing, you know, you're writing a piece for a thing. Nobody in real life says something and awaits an answer, and then the next person says it. People talk over the top of each other, which I'm sure you're very conscious of when you're writing. You're like, well, in that scene, that person wouldn't let them even finish that statement. So you're conscious of doing that. So how the fuck are you doing it on Zoom? Or something like the most polite argument scene you've ever seen.
Yes, I mean, that is very much what I pictured before I saw a lot of those Zoom reads and those development sessions and anything I've been involved in. Yeah, I think there's some things that are more predisposed to that form of reading than others. If it's monologue heavy, you're safe. If you write like Edward Albee and you write in paragraphs, you're grand. But if you're cube fighting one another, as you say, then yeah, you can get into trouble. But I think pretty much anything I've seen, as long as an internet connection is good, as long as that's all been tested, and anything I've sat in on, that's been, you know, a paid viewing thing, it has all been really, really fucking slick, and I don't quite know how it's been managed, because anything I've read over Zoom just with other people, I have had that delay going, oh shit, John's froze, did somebody text John telling me he's froze? You know, we can't hear him. But I read that Zoom has become a seance now. It's like the modern version of a seance, going, is anyone there? Are you there? Can you hear me? So true. But I thought it would be, you know, real horror show stuff. But actually, you know, as I say, if it's the right kind of thing, it does go pretty well. And again, as you say, as your friend who's the performer, it's a great outlet for people. You know, I know that people have organized that with among friends, just to say, let's just do a reading of this comedy for the crack, just to do something different, to lighten ourselves, all that stuff. You know, we can't go and see theater, so let's make our own for the crack some evening. And it's great, it's brilliant. And I think, as well as that, I think that's one of the few positives to take out of all this. I think we're always looking to try and take a positive out of something. And it's unbelievable how much how much more connected we can be while being physically disconnected. I don't think anybody ever thought this was really all that possible, to have these kind of meetings that don't involve people having to drive 50 miles to be in the room. It's incredible that it can be done like this. Oh, obviously not always ideal, but amazing that we can do it, you know, and we just didn't think to do it before, you know.
Yeah. Well, look, as good as it is, I'm still really looking forward to a pint in a pub and a hug. It's going to be
good. Oh, so much. I mean, we're looking at the minute. I just thought about this yesterday. I'm writing a show at the minute for the theatre company that I work with, and I'm going to be directing it as well. I'm very lucky to be doing both. And we've just cast it. And I just had this thought yesterday of going, we're going to finish that show whenever that is. I think we're hoping for April, but God only knows. I will not have hugged one of those people by the time that finishes. And that never happens. I am a hugger anyway, but that, you know, to just be able to walk into the room and go, oh, well, how are you? How's it going? You know, it's going to be so difficult. And so there's going to be such a coldness to it, I think, that you can't do that. But fingers crossed, we'll be able to do it soon.
I know. Going back to one of the points you said about being able to run lines and a creative outlet, one of my favorite things, which I can thank you for, when I first started stand-up, yourself and the basically your little group of mates, when you guys had the Book Finders Cafe in Belfast, Book Finders, if you don't know what it is, it's not there anymore. And I was working in the building on the construction job, which was turning it from the Book Finders into, I think it's going to be like a Cafe Nero, just gentrification at its worst.
Oh God, yeah. Hurt so Mary.
The Book Finders was this I'm gonna say it, grubby little place, but it was really interesting. It was like something out of a movie, or you know, that it always reminded me of that opening scene in Ghostbusters in the old New York library in the basement where all the stacks and all the stuff, you know, like secondhand books. But yeah. Colm and his group of dramatic types used to have basically a night where you could bring a carryout and there would be performances, there was music, mm-hmm. there were people doing readings, people were prepping monologues for class, and they were kind enough to let me try new material. So every time, I was much more prolific writer when I started because I wasn't so bloody lazy. So I was always writing, and every month or every maybe third or fourth event that was on, I would go to the Book Finders, bring a few beers for courage, and I would get to try it out in front of... Now, it was really good as well because you're not just trying out jokes, you're trying out the performance aspect in front of people who love performing. Mm-hmm. So stuff like that probably helps with a bit of stagecraft as well, where you're not just monologuing, or I'm not just standing still talking. There's a lot more movement, engaging with the crowd, heckling, that kind of stuff. So yeah that's something I can thank you guys for, because I think we were working together and you were like, you should just come down and just talk in front of my friends. But it was brilliant because it was fucking packed. So it was...
Yeah, it was incredible those nights. I can say I started them. They didn't exist before I came. And I think they're still going. They're my legacy. They're still, those open stage nights are still going, but not in the lovely Book Finders, unfortunately. Yeah. No, it was gorgeous. And the woman who ran it, Mary, somebody told me when I first went to book the place to have the night, and somebody said her last name is Book Finder. So, you know, so to me, she was Mary Bookfinder in my phone and everything for years. And I never said it to her, but I was like, and then eventually as time went on, I was like, I don't think her name is Bookfinder. she used to write all the bookings on the wall of the cafe. I don't know if you ever saw that, but she used to write it in pencil on the wall in loads of different places. And like anybody would go to a notebook and go, oh, there's no room on that page, and flick to the next bit. She would walk over to like four different parts of the walls and go, oh, there's no room. And then one, and finally find a little space over above the coffee machine to scribble in the Drama Society on the 8th. But she loved it. And it was the only event I think that she stayed for. I mean, she obviously rented out that space an awful lot to different groups. And she said that, well, she probably said it to everybody, but she said to me that was the only event that she ever stayed in the room and sat at the back and watched the whole thing every month, because she just loved the mix of music and singing and performing and comedy and all sorts. And you were fantastic. You blew people away. I was glad to have you, because at least I knew I could take a risk on a few others, not knowing what they would be like. And then I could put you there in the middle to lift everybody back up again. And I was like, oh, we're in safe hands. We've got Darren Matthews. We're all right.
It'd be quite funny, because I would get up and do material, and then the next person would get up and go, I'm just going to do a monologue from Angela's Ashes. And you're like, oh, you crack killer. You fucking crack killer.
That was it. That was so the way. And oh, God, it was the most amazing night to run. And they were great fun. But the trying to get a decent running order together when you have such a wide variety of acts, it can all go one way or the other. Like, it was too much Shakespeare on a Monday night and not enough drink to get everybody through. You know, going, what am I going to do? Somebody sing something upbeat.
Yeah. But I mean, you talk about Shakespeare, you can do that where you can have somebody, you know, a real grim speech by Lady Macbeth, and then the next person could jump up and I'm going to do something by the Faun from A Midsummer Night's Dream, and you're like, this is the same writer.
Yes, exactly. I know. But it was amazing. It was amazing to see people come out of their shell. And I mean, there was people I got involved in that I just knew anecdotally, maybe sang, you know, a couple of times at house parties, they would get their guitar out, but I'd never got up in front of a crowd before. And it was amazing over the 3 or 4 years that night happened to see them get gigs, they start doing weddings, they started to, you know, go out and actually perform in restaurants and bars and grow their whole talent, because that gave them the confidence. That little bit of support at that time was enough to make them go, shit, you know, maybe I can do this, you know. So it was great to see people getting something out of it, and it was a great night's entertainment, but it was amazing to see those acts, so many of them, develop and grow and have the confidence as a result of just a pissy wee gig on a Monday night that everybody got drunk at. It's great.
Yeah, I mean it's obviously, students need no excuse to drink, especially not the theatre types, but to mix the two is great. And also probably the only stage management job you'll ever have where you could be pissed at the same time.
Oh, God. In fact, it probably helped.
Yeah. Full of wine, trying to plug in a guitar. And you're like, what are you plugging that in for? He plays piano. And you're like, ah, for fuck's sake.
It was more of running upstairs to the toilet going, you're on. You're fucking on. Come on. Get out. I've been vamping for 10 minutes. Come on. Oh, good time.
Oh, man. Before I let you free back into the real world, which is, I'm assuming, your bedroom in Kilkeel.
Yeah, yes. And what, my bed, more specifically.
Are you, without giving too much away, what is not upcoming? What are you working on? I'm sure there's plenty of stuff you can keep and put it in the back pocket in the hope that we're allowed into the real world again. Or do you not like sitting on projects?
I don't like to have too many projects at the same stage. I think that's dangerous. If you're trying to start three different things, or you're trying to go into rehearsal with three different things, I think that's the recipe for disaster. I think if you have projects at different stages, you're grand. You can handle everything. But that's the problem now. I think everything is at the same stage, not happening. So I think that's kind of the problem. But I'm working on. I did a couple of short films. Wrote a couple of short films, which I'd never done before, over lockdowns, various lockdowns. So, and some of that's been filmed, and some of it still needs to be filmed. And there's some money to do it, which is great. I have some funding. The biggest thing is working on the next, hopefully the next theatre show, which is going to happen at the Mac. And it should happen hopefully in April, if not May. And basically it's a piece about the experience of what we've all had in lockdown and feeling isolated and craving that connection, but it has nothing to do with COVID. So it's a series of monologues, and the actors are in the windows of the Mac, all around the windows, and as an audience you go around with headphones on, and you're listening to the thoughts of the person in the window. And so they're physically doing something. They could be making a cup of tea, they could be whatever they're doing, but you're hearing what they're going through in their head for 5 or 10 minutes, and then you move on to the next experience. So you meet like 8 different characters and you hear what they're going through. And some of it's really, really hilarious. I mean, I didn't set out, I had no real brief for this. It was just go and write something that's connected to what we've all been through. And I thought, oh God, it's going to be so depressing. Some of it is fucking hilarious. I mean, I say that, hopefully it's hilarious, but, so some of it is very light and kind of absurd, because what we've gone through is so friggin' absurd. So to try and touch on on some of those feelings and on how those experiences, what other experiences can you go through in life that are similar in terms of where they, how you're feeling, you know, going through them, you know, what can you have, what have we all gone through before that now, as because of what we've all lived through, we have more empathy and more, you know, I think we'll listen to that more and hear it more. So that's the next show. And we hope, because it's outside and it can be spaced and it can be distanced, that it can happen soon. But we wait and see.
Usual thing. I know you're saying you think it's hilarious, but if there's one thing I've learned, it's there is no comedy without an audience. So you'll find out pretty quick.
That's it. But the good thing is, at least with everybody wearing headphones, if no one laughs, no one will hear that no one laughed. They'll just maybe think, I didn't find that particularly funny, but I'm sure others did. And I'll be standing at the back going, not one laughed, not one fucker laughed.
Yeah. Jesus. Well, I always say that I used to, one of my opening jokes years ago was, I used to say, hi, my name's Darren, I'm a comedian. If I say anything tonight that's not funny, this is a spoken word piece.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yeah, it's all art. It's all subjective. Nobody has to laugh. They don't want to.
Oh God, I know. It's like when somebody says, I'm an alternative comedian. I'm like, well, the alternative to comedy is not laughing. So get better at your fucking job, okay?
True. But that's the thing, what we talked about, even about the fear, and I'm sure you will be when you go back to the live gig again, the first big live gig again, of going, the fear of going, shit, I haven't, you know, I really haven't done this in quite some time. Whereas before, you didn't have time to think about it. You just were doing it. You had a gig on the Monday night, you had a gig next Tuesday, you had a gig whenever, and you were just on the treadmill, and yeah, that was it. And you, now I think I've, you know, we've all had so much time to think and worry and you know, get really existential about it, that you know, it's scary. I'm more scared about a show that, you know, may not even happen in 6 or 8 weeks time than shows that, you know, go up tomorrow and we're not ready. You know, I've felt better about it, about those shows in the past. So it's incredible what it has done to our brains and our self-confidence, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting, or a disaster, one of the two. Yeah. I'm sure you'll be fine. You've a team backing you up. I'm just like, it's just me. Okay, here we go. But Colin, before I let you go, is there anywhere we can find work? What's your social medias? Where do we get you for your?
Well, if you follow Threes Theatre Company on Instagram and Facebook and all the places where you do social media, I think we're on Twitter. I mean, I'm not confident, but I think we could be. Yeah, if you follow that you'll see all the work, a lot of the work I'm producing. And you can, my personal Instagram has a lot of the stuff I'm working on as well, but you have that, you can share that.
I'll put that in the link in the description.
Yeah, brilliant. And that's it. But yeah, that's I mean, there's not a wealth of stuff at the minute, obviously, but hopefully someday soon there will be more.
Yeah, I know. Sort of, as you said, it's the continual waiting game of what's going to happen. We don't know, but yeah.
No idea.
Well, we'll all be sitting around like a socially distanced in a park drinking, just going, I used to be good at this.
I used to do the theatre, you know, I used to do the plays. Yeah, but fingers crossed soon. And I can't wait to get to see you perform live again. I think we all need comedy more than we've ever needed comedy before. So dear God, let it come back soon.
Yeah, well, this is one of the problems, because I mean, I'm sure you're being prolific with your writing, but people are saying to me, oh, you must be doing loads of writing in lockdown. And I'm like, if you've ever seen my comedy, it's all about adventures I have, travel stories, stupid shit I get up to in foreign places. I haven't been able to do that, so no, very little. And I definitely don't want to get back up on stage and just fucking talk about COVID. Not a chance.
Well, that's it. We've all said in our industry that COVID's going to be the next troubles. So we're gonna have 20 years of COVID plays, COVID art. Let's hope not. Anyway, I don't, whether that happens or not, we're not ready for it yet. I don't think anybody is ready for any of that, because we're still living it, or we will just have been living it by the time life stuff comes back properly. So yeah, I would imagine it's going to be challenging to try and find what's been funny about the last year.
Yeah,
but You'll find it. You'll do it for sure. And but it's, it is, it's really hard to be creative at all at this time. So fair play. If you're getting anything done, if you're writing anything at all and doing anything with it, fair play.
That's okay. Right. Well, Colm, I will hopefully get to see you at some point or one of your projects. Keep me in the loop of what you're up to, and we'll have a glass of Prosecco and do that artsy double kiss thing you see people doing in the movies, you know. All the theatre, the theatre, darling, the theatre.
I can't wait. I'm going to hold you to that double kissing. That's enough of a reason to get out of bed in the morning, a double kiss to look forward to.
Absolutely. I'll stick on a nice suit and everything. Might even shave. You know?
Oh, no, you really know how to woo a person.
Oh, brilliant.
Thank you so much for having me, Darren. It's been great fun.
No problem, buddy. Stay sane, stay safe, all the bits and bobs, okay?
You too. Thank you.
No problem. Folks, if you've enjoyed this episode, as always, hit the old like and subscribe button. I'm putting these out weekly to try and hopefully keep you sane at present, and then give you something to do when you're out on your state-appointed walk with your dog or your children, or your dog and your children, whatever you're up to. So yeah, guys, Darren Matthews and Sometimes Friends. It's on Spotify, all the Google. If you're listening to it here, you've found it somewhere. Show it to your friends if you think it's funny or if you think it's worth listening to. And yeah, I'll see you next episode. Thanks, Colm. See you later, buddy.
Bye.